Every mobile developer hits the same set of problems. Even some of the best and professional developers hit those problems. Wouldn't it be cool to see how they solve those problems? It wouldn't it be awesome if all the tools they use are right at your fingertips as well? That's this episode of Dev Radio. We're talking with some awesome developers. And at the end of the show, an incredible secret is revealed. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and you've caught us on a great day. We're here talking about some problems and some awesome solutions, and we're here with Paul DiCarlo, and we have a special guest, Scott Peterson. Scott Peterson is the owner of Liquid Daffodil. They're making some of the best Windows apps you can find in the market. You've probably used a handful of them. Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, great to be here, Jerry.
Happy to be here.
Paul, hey. You're in Texas, and Scott, you're in Texas. You guys know each other. Scott, Liquid Daffodil, tell me what it is.
Sure, Liquid Daffodil is really the corporation front for me. I'm the only developer, but I had to figure out a way for taxes to bill it through a corporation, and so I started Liquid Daffodil about 6 or 7 years ago. But Liquid Daffodil is me, and everything is just either, well, really me or my wife. My wife handles the billing, and I handle the development, and our front is Liquid Daffodil.
Nice. Fronted. So this is where you launder all your app money, basically.
Exactly. And it'd be really funny if that weren't true. But yes, it really is a laundry factory through Liquid Daffodil. Yep.
Nice. Okay, so when we're talking about apps that Liquid Daffodil makes, specifically, we're talking about Windows apps because you go all the way back to the first Windows phone.
Yep, sure do. Started creating apps started creating software for Windows 2.0. I was on the Thunder Beta Visual Basic back in the day, if you remember that, VB1.0, but really got interested in Windows Phone development. Go ahead.
No, yeah. I don't remember that.
You don't remember that. Ask your mom, she used it. So started developing for Windows Phone when it came out. I really had stopped using devices altogether. I did a lot of work out at Compaq, and we had the little iPacks and things like that, and I felt so connected. I said, you know, this whole smartphone thing is just silly. I'm sick of it. And then Windows Phone came out, and I thought, holy moly, this is just a cool device. And I started writing software for it. I had a phone, and I noticed that almost nobody else had one. So I wrote a little app that was just called I'm a WP7. And the whole goal of the app was just, if you had a Windows phone, you registered, and then you could see people in your area that had a Windows phone. And I noticed there were actually like 7 or 8 people in my county that had one. And little by little, users started to say, well, it's really cool that I can see you, but I'd like to be able to talk to you or send a message to you or, you know, do all kinds of things like that. And so over the course of about 9 months, I built it into really, at this point, still the largest app I've ever created. And it was the first one, to my knowledge, first third-party app to actually get 1 million-plus downloads for Windows Phone. In fact, it's still my most highly requested app to bring back. I probably get requests for it 2 or 3 times a week. People say, you know, all of this other junk you've done is really fun and great, but if you'd bring back Outsider, I might actually get a Windows phone again. So
I'm a WP10 is what you need now, I suppose.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Nice. So written a lot of apps between there and here, but that was the first big one.
Okay, so that's pretty nice. Sounds like you're bringing people together in a cool way. That's very nice. All right, walk me through the process. Where are we? What are we talking about? What are we here today for?
So today I think we're talking about FanBand. And FanBand is an app for Microsoft Band users, and it does one thing. It updates their Microsoft Band theme with a different wallpaper, or colors for their band. That's it. And it's become, at this point, it's pretty much been the top downloaded health and fitness app for Windows for probably 8 to 9 months. And it's also got one of the highest rankings in now the iOS and Android store. And the impetus for this was that I had a Microsoft Band and it had these boring, you know, 5 or 6 themes. And I thought it'd be really cool if I could just stick a picture on it. And I actually created it for myself one evening and then mentioned it to a couple people, and they said, I want it. And that's how FanBand started.
Nice. So I've got a band. I assume this is band two, or is this band one?
This is both. In fact, if there ever is a band three, it'll support band three. But yeah, so full functionality for band one and band two users, as well as the ability to update your themes over the wire, which is kind of cool. I think FanBand's the only one that's doing that. For example, if your wife, for example, was in China on a PC and you were, you know, in Tuscaloosa, Alabama with your band, she could update your band theme remotely across the world. So that's a pretty cool piece of functionality as well that we added. Yeah.
That's what you want, is a surprise theme. I like it.
Yes.
Good. All right. So tell
Here
me
you
how
go, honey.
It work. I talked to the band through the band API, and over the wire I get. Or wait, over the wire? No, you just said wireless. So it how does it work?
I can't tell you. It's a little bit sneaky, and I don't really want to get – no, so it's really very simple. So, the Microsoft Band SDK primarily works through Bluetooth, a Bluetooth pairing. It sort of works through USB now, but it mostly works through a Bluetooth pairing. And the way that I facilitate the remote updates is just through notification hubs. I send a tiny little raw notification packet that's tagged based on a user's Microsoft account ID. And so it sends a specific raw notification to that device that's paired with the band and updates it that way. So it's not really that sneaky. It's just something that a lot of folks aren't using push notifications for, which is remote communication instead of, you know, toasts or tiles or messages, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Very clever. Very clever. Okay. So earlier we were talking about how there is a problem that we're here to solve. What was the problem with your app?
So there wasn't a problem with my app because everything I do is phenomenal and perfect all the time. But the challenge...
I worded that totally wrong. Yeah.
The challenge, wink, wink, that I had is that I had a bunch of users who had Microsoft bands that for some reason or another were not able to use a Windows ecosystem. A lot of times it was because they had a corporate-issued device or whatever. And they said, we love FanBand, we love Microsoft Band, we love FanBand, but now all of a sudden I have to use an Android or an iOS phone. Could you please create it for these other platforms? And honestly, in the beginning, I said no. And I said no because I wanted to act arrogant, right? I'm this high-paid Microsoft corporate enterprise developer. I would never stoop to that level. But honestly, I was a little nervous about it. I didn't really know how easy it would be. And so I was telling people no until I finally made a commitment to some folks that said, we'll do whatever we have to do if you'll just make it for – honestly, it was an Android device – if you'll make it for Android. Then the other part of that – was that I didn't know what the demographics were for Microsoft Band users on Android. I didn't know how many Android users actually used them. So nobody would give me the numbers, and I couldn't find any numbers. So I thought, I'll bet if I go out to the Google Play Store and look at the Microsoft Health app, which is now the Band app, if I look at the Health app and look at the ratings, the number of ratings, that could give me an indicator, if I compare it to other platforms, how many people have it. And actually looked like... To me, it looked like more Microsoft Band users had an Android device than a Windows user. So I thought, okay, here's a really good opportunity to make a bunch of people happy. And that was the impetus there.
Yep. So which platform would you start with? Obviously now, because of your guerrilla warfare here, you would start with the Android ecosystem. All right. So how did you begin?
So I started out being really concerned and building a big project that was really messy. And then I scaled it all back, and I just pulled up a Xamarin Forms app with a portable library, and I brought in the Microsoft Band SDK namespaces from NuGet, and I said, let me just see if I can connect to these devices. And in 5 to 6 minutes, I was able to pair my band to my Mac Mini that I have over here and update my band through an iOS app. So it had zero UI. I was just picking a quick image and sending colors over. And so from the time I opened up Visual Studio to the time I was able to update my band through iOS was literally less than 10 minutes using Xamarin Forms. So, but I'm going to pretend it took a long time and that I was really, really smart, but it didn't. It was really very, very fundamental process. So the iOS and Android versions are Xamarin Forms app. And really the only reason that they're separate is because I started initially had a full built out project for Windows Phone, originally Windows 8, then 8.1 on Windows Phone, a universal project. And then it just made it easier if I just disconnected those from the Xamarin project. But at this point, they could be all in the same project. But the Xamarin Forms project is iOS and Android at this point.
Yep. No doubt you have a lot of code shared between them. Paul, are you a fan of this app?
I'm like the number one fan of FanBand. Actually, the thing that I love about it is the fact that there's so many choices. And I never thought about how, like, I didn't know I could customize my band, I guess. And that was the big thing here. And they have this feature, and it sounds so weak. You actually had kind of hinted and joked about this earlier, Jerry, where you can schedule it to update at a certain time of day. So, like, I can say, like, 7 a.m., update with one of my favorites. So I go shopping through this list, and, like, I wake up, and today, right, I have Terminator 2. But tomorrow I could have the classic Sega Genesis theme or any of the other ones that I've chosen as a favorite. And so, like, that for me, I never thought about that. I always put the thing on and was like, yay, I'm doing something good for myself. I'm counting calories, and I'm making sure I'm working out. But now it's like I'm looking cool while I'm doing that, and I like
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Makes me want to use it more.
Who would have guessed that you could have looked more cool, Paul? That's just crazy.
Well, and so this is kind of a cool aspect here for this reason. So as Paul knows, really my primary motivation for creating apps is just because users tend to love them, and I'm having a blast doing it. It's really fun for me because I'm not doing it for the money. And so one of the things that I've noticed with Microsoft Band users is interestingly enough, they're kind of fitness freaks in general. Would you ever have guessed that they care about fitness? And they tend to be a little bit hyper and maybe ADHD. And so I had users tell me, you know what, I loved that theme when I put it on, right? I loved that theme at 7 o'clock this morning, but I get bored of it by 9 a.m. I wish there was a way that it could just know what I love and update it for me. And that's actually why we added that piece of functionality in there, so that, you know, all these really hyper sort of fitness crazy people out there would be constantly surprised and motivated throughout the day. And then people who are not fitness people like Paul, who's just pretty much a slob, he even enjoys it. So, you know,
even a guy like Paul can enjoy
it. Even a guy like Paul.
It's sort of for the elite, but Paul could get into it too. Makes total sense. All right. Walk me through why this is why this was a problem and how some of the pieces you put into this puzzle.
So the biggest challenge, obviously, was whether I could get the Microsoft Band SDK working reasonably well on both platforms, which I proved it out. You know, had a proof of concept in about 7 to 10 minutes. But the big challenge here, as Paul knows, I interact constantly with my users. And I try and do it in a very personal way. I'm always having users say, here's what I care about, here's what I want. I respond to them mostly right away. And I really try and get information from them instead of just saying, did you leave me a bad review, change it, you know, something like that, which is more the norm. But one thing that I realized for the last few years, it's not even with FanBand, but especially with FanBand, is that users actually didn't know what they were doing sometimes. And I realized that I didn't know what I was doing sometimes in software either, where I couldn't, you know, I might be on a Premier support call with Microsoft, and I would realize halfway through it that I couldn't tell them how to reproduce it because I really didn't know what I was doing. So I think it's just a human challenge that we have here. So users would say, you know, I'm walking through this scenario, I'm doing this, and I click, and then everything just crashes. And then I'd say, can you reproduce it? Then I would say, it works on my machine, right, or whatever. Right. So they could never reproduce it. And I said, there's something that's going on here that's consistent, right? I've got 2 or 3 people a week. You know, I've got 1% of the, you know, installation base, you know, at some point of time saying I'm having this happen, but nobody knows how it's happening, and I can't tell from my code. So I said, I've got to be able to solve this problem, and it's essentially impossible for me to do this by putting in logs and other debugging scenarios. So that was one.
Could I just guess that some of these platforms you're less familiar with as well, so it's even harder for you to be able to guess and kind of mentally debug the problem too?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I almost thought at one point, I thought maybe I just need to give up, right? Because I can't figure it out. I don't know these platforms well enough, and I'm not skilled, and I can't respond intelligently to these people. Some of these people may know the platform better than me, and I can't respond intelligently. And so I was kind of at an impasse. What am I going to do? And then the other aspect of it that was a big deal is that since I have so much customer and fan interaction all the time, I would get people asking for features. And because I'm sort of a codependent people pleaser kind of guy, I'm constantly saying, oh my gosh, that's the best feature request ever. I'm going to do it tonight. And then sadly I would, right? And I had no idea, and I'd have no idea whether these were actually valuable things and other people even cared.
Yeah.
So one perfect example was I had a guy that said that, but again, was this sort of ADHD kind of guy that said, I don't even want to go through. There's too many themes. I don't even want to go through them. I just want a random theme all the time, right? I just want to get a random theme and just surprise me. And I thought, well, you know, so of course I told him, oh my gosh, that's the best feature request ever. I'll put it in tonight, right? And then I did. And then I realized a couple days later, maybe nobody else cares, right? Maybe I put this effort in, nobody else cares. Or the other aspect of this was, this is something that you're typically going to have to do as a sort of a one-off, sure, a secondary or tertiary function. Do people even know how to get to it? So those were the challenges. Are people using what we have in there? Do they care? Can I figure out when things go wrong, how to reproduce it, and how I can solve whatever the problem is, and then speak intelligently to the user base to say, you know what, I think we figured it out and feel confident about it, and then give them some kind of a reasonable update that, you know, that had some information in it.
So let me try and put some words to this because I can see where we're going. So one is around this idea of exception logging. So this is a hard thing for a lot of developers because they don't know what to do. An exception occurs, and then what do you do with that exception? Do you tell the user? Do you pop open an email and say, please push send? Do you log it to a file, and then what do you do with it from there? That's a common problem, and I hear you saying that's one of them. And the other one is around telemetry. How are people, or are people, even using the things that you're putting your time and heart into inside this application? Or are they really just using the basic features, and they're just talking about those others and not actually leveraging them? I hear those two, but I hear this third one as well around communication. And I want to go through all three, but I want to go to communication just for a second, because I know you do a great job of talking to your users, and I bet a lot of app developers hear that, intuitively know that it's a smart idea, but wonder how, right? What, are you just emailing everybody?
So this is something that I feel like I took a number of years to learn, which is that almost everything that happens with the app experience is emotional. Now that seems really fluffy and really silly, but when people are using an app, and this is true for corporate development, large scale enterprise development, I've had, you know, deployments that were in other cultures, other languages that had hundreds of thousands of users, and every single scenario at the end of the day came back to how a user felt during the experience. Yeah. So they could have a really crappy app, but emotionally, they felt connected to me, or they felt connected to the product or the company, and they actually loved it even if it was crappy. And then the reverse would happen as well. You could have just a solid performing app that looked great, followed every standard, just never had a problem. And if emotionally they felt disconnected from the company or the app or the developer, they actually had a bad experience. And this is something that, again, I learned through really just through experience. And so here's what I decided to do maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. I started to make it extremely easy for users to communicate with me, but I gave them reasons to communicate with me. So instead of saying, oh, if you've got some problem, it's easy to click a support link, which everybody does, I tried to motivate them to communicate with me. So for example, in the outsider days, people actually earned points for just emailing me or just requesting something. In FanBan, for example, one of the biggest features front and center, is the ability for them to request a theme. So through the simple process of them saying, you know, I don't see the Terminator 2 theme. I'm, you know, this dorky guy in Houston, and I really like Terminator 2, right? I want a Terminator 2 theme. For them to just say, hey, whoever you are out in the ether, can I have a Terminator 2 theme? And then have me say, you know, go refresh your themes. It's live, right? 10 minutes later, it's live.
Yeah.
That actually changes the entire emotional makeup of the app experience. And they actually never have to use the app again to have a lasting personal connection with me, because I've said, hey, I care about hearing from you. And then when they communicate with me, I act like I care.
Yeah.
Well, let me say it this way. I luckily don't have to fake that I care. So I actually care. I actually care what these people think in a reasonable way. And I think that comes through, because when I respond to them, people get that. And that's something that I think I'm just lucky to have, because not everybody actually cares. I think it's just something I got lucky that, you know, again, it's back to this codependent people pleaser thing, but I actually care what people think. And I want users
I think you have totally hit on a golden nugget here, that if an app team looks at their user base as a number and they don't think about them as a real people and they don't care about them at all, they're not going to build an experience that causes them to love their app. They're just going to build one that gets it done. I think it's you're really stating it. And there's something cool about the idea of rewarding people for contacting you even when there's a problem. Like, hey, thanks for telling me about that. I'll give you a, or now you qualify for, or that's pretty cool. Not every app has a monetary system inside it. So, you know, people are going to have to be creative, but that's a pretty cool way of making it so that not only are you welcome to call me, but man, I'm happy for you to call me, or not call me, but you know, contact me.
Yeah. And the other thing, Jerry, and I've actually, you know, cause I'm actually a Microsoft certified trainer and talk to a lot of other developers, and I've kind of put out an informal challenge to developers to do something that changed this, sort of my mindset on this as well. I'm the kind of guy that, you know, if I get 500 five-star reviews and then one guy gives it a crap review,
you can't sleep at night.
Nope, I'm depressed and everything else. And what I found myself doing for a number of years was getting really defensive about it, right? This guy must be a jerk, or he doesn't know what he's talking about. And I decided that I was going to use this as an experiment and sort of practice caring about that one guy for 20 seconds, right? 20 seconds or 30 seconds. I said, you know what? This guy's unhappy. He may just be an unhappy person, right? And it's reflecting or he, for some reason, he was motivated to really hate this app. Let me just practice.
That's right.
Yeah, for 20 or 30 seconds, let me practice caring about him. It's almost, you know, as Paul knows, I have 10 children. It's almost what I have to do with some of my kids. Just who cares how tired
pretend
or annoyed?
Pretend to care.
Yeah, pretend to care. Practice caring for 20 seconds. And and here's what I experienced, which I actually would have never predicted. I would say 90% of the people that leave those kind of reviews after 20 or 30 seconds absolutely do a 180 on the review. It goes from 1 to 5, and they go from this developer ought to be, you know, drawn and quartered, to man, I love this guy, I want to make a donation to the cause, right, or whatever it is, in about 20 or 30 seconds. Now you have that small percentage of people who's just out of pride alone will say, okay, it's awesome, but you're only going to get a 3, right? All that users want to feel like is that they're cared about, and it only takes a short amount of time, right? 20 seconds, really. It only takes 20 seconds.
Let me ask you a quick question. It's not unusual for app developers to come to us and say logging and telemetry are difficult things to put into their app. What do you give them?
Well, you know, one of the things that we recently have access to is Microsoft is now owns the Hockey App platform. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but it allows you to kind of solve all of those problems that Scott was really just talking about. And I'm not even kidding. I mean, like, out of the box, I'd say those are three things it very specifically goes after. When we're talking about communicating with users, there is a feedback mechanism. When you talk about things that could arise from your one guy targeting three different platforms, how the heck do you deal with platform inconsistencies and bug inconsistencies? Thing is, it will give you crash reports for those particular platforms, log all those up. And then let's say you've got that feature request coming in from a user and you want to see if it's getting used. You can implement custom analytic tracking on there to be able to see whether those features are being used. And so it's interesting because...
And it brings all that to one nice dashboard, too. I mean, it's just a great experience.
That's it. That's exactly it. It is literally created for these types of scenarios. You have something that you want to distribute across multiple platforms. And apparently, this is a problem, what Scott has kind of hit on here. I don't think this is like a solitary problem. I think this is starting to be looked at as a trend. and, you know, maybe even gives you some background into why Microsoft may have had an interest in Hockey App in the first place. Sure. But it is a platform specifically for that. And I mean, there's other bells and whistles that go beyond that. For example, if you wanted to test builds internally to maybe a specific group of users and not a different group, or even on a platform basis, or maybe you want your CI to go to internal testing, all of that's supported through this platform. And I mean, they make it easy. Like, so for us to have some
testing,
sort of
flighting of different betas to different user groups, all kinds of cool stuff. I mean,
exactly.
There's so much to Hockey App, but specifically the three things that Scott's talking about, they're just sitting there waiting for you to take it. And are the first two apps still free? Is that the way it works?
There is. So the first two apps that you register in Hockey App are free. So there's no cost. So you can instrument two application releases. So maybe you've got an app that's on multiple platforms. You could either house them under one app release and get all their statistics aggregated, or split them up into two, and that would be free. Yes. And it's amazing. You know, the other thing is they package this all up in these just easy-to-consume SDKs. So you bring down the Hockey SDK either as a Xamarin component or a NuGet package. What features of the three that I laid out there do you want? Do you want feedback? Do you want crash reporting? Do you want custom telemetry? Sprinkle it through your code, and you've got it now where you need it. And that's it. Everything else is done for you and aggregated for you in the Hockey End backend.
Yeah. And I think it's worth pointing out the Hockey App was a product or a company prior to when Microsoft bought it. It focused really on every platform but really Windows. And so when you bring it in, right, now it has Windows support, but when you look at their docs, when you look at their samples, when you look at their help, it is full of all this support. If you're a Windows developer today and you're like, man, I think I could figure this out except for all these other platforms, lucky you, there's tons and tons of help for Android and iOS platforms.
Yeah, and I think it brings into that whole, you know, the ecosystem story that, you know, Visual Studio is starting to be a very pervasive platform, right? We've got Visual Studio Code that's now on multiple devices. But now, if you're running the vanilla the original King Visual Studio on your Windows machine and you've got your Xamarin tools installed, you can create an application. You can then instrument it with the DevOps stuff that Hockey App gives you. All of this just packaged into, you know, what do you need? What do you want? Come grab it. Here it is. A few lines of code. You're now instrumented and ready to go.
And I think a lot of people, especially developers, see this as a developer solution. You know, I don't know how to log it. This will solve it. I don't know how to do telemetry. This will solve it. I don't know. But really, these are user solutions, right? Because all of a sudden, there's so much quality being pushed down to the end user because we can actually address problems when they happen rather than being lost in the ether.
I think, Scott, would you agree with that? I mean, a lot of the functionality I think that comes out of here is as useful as it is to the developer, what is the net effect? Does it help you, or is it helping the users at the end of the day, that information that comes out of there?
So I think the answer is that it's helping everyone. But I like that you use the term DevOps. So I get tired of even hearing the term DevOps at this point, but this is a really good application of that word. Here's why I like this scenario is because I've learned that I care about specific things that nobody else cares about, and especially if I'm in an operations scenario, if I'm integrating Hockey App in a large-scale application, it's going to give information to folks that are not me that in a way that they care about. So I guess the easier way to say it is I can see things that I care about. It gives me information that I care about, but there's a whole bunch of stuff I don't care about that other people do, right? The marketing people might care about certain aspects, the operations people or the database people or the support people, right? I happen to be all of these roles, but realistically, the value of Hockey App just increases exponentially when you talk about integrating this into, you know, real scenarios. You know, some of these large scale corporate enterprise packages that I'm creating, you know, for my real job, I've already got people that I'm talking to about Hockey App and integrating them, and I'm trying to help them sort of shift the paradigm from, oh, this is something that somebody would just get on their phone, to something you could integrate with an entire, you know, gas and oil system.
Yeah. And I think a lot of developers don't realize just how popular Hockey App is. You know, since Microsoft bought it, the changes have been pretty small. Why such small increments? Because don't break it. We have like an awesome customer base. You know what I mean? And so I think that's an important aside, that this isn't just a niche sort of a tool for developers to use. I also think that generally speaking, most app developers that aren't top-tier app developers have heard of Hockey App but haven't taken the time to play with it and realize that we're not making this up, that it really is a simple tool and a simple solution to add to your apps.
Yeah,
just one of those things.
Yeah, so Paul, tell the truth. How long did it take you to write the code for the Windows 8.1 platform, for example, the first phase of that? How long did it take you to write the code in seconds?
To implement the hockey crash analytics into really any platform that we were looking at, because I know we eventually did it on iOS and Android. On almost every platform, it was about as fast as it took to read the documentation. I mean, I was literally going from documentation to here's the example to how I do this. And I'm sitting there looking around, is there anything else I need to know? Is there anything else I need to do? And lo and behold, I saw that as long as I was capturing in the entry point of the application, I had access to all of the crash reporting data, all of it. So it was the equivalent of putting a try-catch statement around main. I mean, it was just, boom, single thing flowed through there. So because of that, because of the kind of ease, the simplicity, no time at all. And that's because I think the back-end stuff is sort of taken care of for you. Mm-hmm. And it would seem like they've figured out that this is a common scenario. You know, I'm just being hypothetical here, but guessing. You know, when we had this explosion of mobile development, I think the big change that you had there was a lot of independent developers, hobbyist developers, and even corporations were finding that their users were now the public. I mean, it was your consumer-based public, mm-hmm. right? And so
you couldn't just go to the event viewer and look at the logs.
Exactly. And so the thing is what happens when you put an application into the hands of all of these users who may not have context as to what they're using your app for. They may think it's for something else, right? Yeah. And you need to understand when you open this to the masses, like what Scott's saying, what are they doing? And do they have the right tools either built into the application provided by the developer to understand how to use those things properly and have, you know, what it would be effectively a positive emotional experience at the end of that, which I don't even think some of that went into some of the development before these days, right? You give these things to the people, and I think the people have kind of pushed back and created, that's why we need this tool now.
I'm hearing it. I am totally hearing it, Paul. Everything is solved inside Hockey App. It's just one of those kind of secret weapons that app developers have, and maybe they just aren't leveraging it. Is it really just for the mobile developer, though, Paul?
Well, you know, I think that it came out as a need that cropped up from what is involved in mobile application development space. But remember, all that tooling is there. And so, I thought this was really crazy. As I'm going through this document, the documentation for Hockey App, you can actually distribute beta builds of apps to users through WPF applications. So you can instrument it with Hockey App. Get this, and throw the beta, the latest and greatest, right, to a targeted set of users, perhaps within your enterprise, on that desktop application that you're creating. I thought there is
a little sweet feature nobody knows that Hockey App has. WPF, Windows Presentation Foundation. Scott, you think WPF is still relevant?
So yeah, I actually really do. In fact, I just had this conversation a couple of days ago with another developer. So I mostly write large-scale corporate enterprise level solutions, and most of my recs are still for Windows desktop solutions, WPF based solutions. Now they may have something really fun or fancy or new on the back end, like we want Azure on the back end, we want to integrate with Office 365 or SharePoint or, you know, some of these other scenarios, but the front end user experience by and large is actually a WPF app. So I'm really excited to hear that. I actually didn't know that, Paul, but this is something I can bring back to my clients now and say, hey, it's not just for mobile, hint, hint, wink, wink, right?
Yeah.
So, cool.
Wow. Hey, Scott, if developers want to look and find more, or just users want to find out more about Liquid Daffodil, where do you point them?
Sure, they could go to liquiddaffodil.com, or they could go to any of the stores, the Google Play Store, the Apple Store, or the Windows Store, and just search for Liquid Daffodil, and any of our apps that are available and supported will come up for them.
Perfect. Just like you, I paid my mortgage for years and years and years with WPF, and it is still a beautiful... I can still see the telemetry of Visual Studio, and I'm telling you, WPF is not on the decline.
Okay, sure. So here's the funny thing, Jerry, is I'm all of a sudden thinking of a WPF version of FanBand just as a proof of concept, right? And use the desktop extensions to stick it out there in the store, but have it be WPF. So, man, so because of the way that I am, I'm going to say, that's a really big deal. I'm going to do it tonight.
I'll do it tonight. That's terrific. Scott, thanks, man, for being on the show.
Thanks, Jerry.
Paul, it's great having you on, man.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
See you guys later.